America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day when there is increased clarity that the disaster in Afghanistan with the evacuation that is still struggling nobly, perhaps, but not encouragingly along. With that evacuation, there is not only an impact on American foreign policy, obviously, but all of that has a profound impact on the domestic policy, the desired transformation of America by the Biden administration, which is why Daniel Henninger argues in the Wall Street Journal, very persuasively, I might add, that the time to replace Joe Biden's foreign policy is right now. Daniel Henninger is deputy editor of the Wall Street Journal's editorial page, and his weekly column Wonderland appears in the Wall Street Journal every Thursday, as it appeared yesterday on that epic Thursday. Daniel, always a pleasure and honor to speak to you. What does the train of events in Afghanistan really have to do with the struggle by the Biden administration to spend $3.5 trillion on some domestic needs as they see them here in the United States?
Yeah, Michael, well, thanks. I think they are inexplicably connected. I really do. What we're watching in Afghanistan is obviously a debacle and effectively the collapse of Joe Biden's foreign policy, such as it was. But it is worth noting that in at least one of his White House appearances this week, before getting to the situation in Afghanistan, this was before the bombing that killed 13 American servicemen, he first brought up the fact that the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, had done procedurally passage of the $3.5 trillion spending bill. This was important enough to President Biden to bring it up before talking about Afghanistan. And this is clearly what he's staking his legacy on, his passage of that bill. And I point out that inside of it, there are four new entitlements, like Social Security and Medicare. There are universal pre-kindergarten, universal child care payments, universal paid family and medical leave, and 2 years of community college. The significance of that is that those entitlements will go forward for a generation. They will not be repealed if they're passed. And what they will do is absorb, as progressives have been trying to do since at least the end of the Vietnam War, as you well know, they will absorb spending from the defense budget. They will reprogram money out of defense, which will go flat or fall in the future, just at a time, clearly, when the United States needs to increase defense spending as a credible deterrent against enemies such as China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, and now, incredibly enough, the Taliban in Afghanistan. That won't happen if the Biden and the Democratic domestic agenda gets enacted. Then it'll be very, very difficult for the United States to deter our enemies.
Well, you make the point historically that this echoes the conflict between Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. And one of the reasons that it was so fatefully important that Reagan actually win the presidential election of 1980. Explain the analogy and why it's so instructive.
Well, of course, Jimmy Carter was indeed as myopic on foreign policy and the threat from the Soviet Union as Joe Biden is now about terror and Afghanistan. But let it be said, Michael, that Jimmy Carter at least recognized towards the end of his presidency that it was on the wrong track and recognized the Soviet threat. Nonetheless, Ronald Reagan took advantage of Carter's myopia by giving speeches pointing out that the United States needed to do more than it was to resist the Soviet Union. And in practice after Reagan became president, he ended the Cold War by increasing defense spending, making it clear to the Soviets that their external aggression just was not sustainable. Now, we're in a tough spot. We've got at least three more years of the Biden presidency. It's not going away. But we've just experienced extraordinary damage to America's credibility and stature in the world. And I'm suggesting that it's time for prominent Republicans, including some of those who would like to get the nomination in 2020, to start speaking out publicly and substantively about an alternative foreign policy, simply as a counterweight to what Joe Biden has done to us, and also to send a message to our allies and friends around the world, who, as we know, are distraught at the moment, to send a message to them that the United States will be there for them eventually. It's not an optimal situation by any means, but I think the best minds and some of the responsible political leaders in the United States have got to start speaking up now in a substantive way about an alternative to the Biden foreign policy collapse.
And what do you say to those who say that, look, this would be giving Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden exactly the kind of race they want to run, where the Republicans offer more war, more defense spending, more alarmism about terror, whereas we offer free kindergarten, free pre-K, pardon me, and free preschool, and free domestic leave, and, of course, two free years of junior college? Which would you rather spend money on? Forever wars, which Joe Biden has so vociferously condemned, or these domestic transformative programs?
Well, I think one answer to that is, yes, it's often a tough sell, defense spending, but that the argument has to be made clear that it is not to precipitate or cause wars, but to prevent them. The idea is deterrence. And deterrence means pushing back hard enough and with enough credibility that your enemies out there do not take the first step. For instance, at the moment, probably the greatest risk the world faces post-Kabul, post-Afghanistan, is Xi Jinping in China deciding he can get away with taking Taiwan. If the Chinese were to move on Taiwan and to do so successfully, it would completely alter the strategic balance in the Pacific and probably the world. That doesn't mean we go to war with China over Taiwan. It does mean that we have enough of a deterrent in terms of our fleet and our support for Taiwan so the Chinese don't take that chance. And I have to say, Michael, I think people watching these scenes out of Kabul this past week, indeed seeing what they did in Hong Kong last year as well, has made it clear to a lot of Americans that one way or another, like it or not, the United States has people everywhere in the world. We have both individual and economic interests to defend around the world, and we're going to have to take whatever steps are necessary to protect ourselves.
And do you think that Kevin McCarthy is the right guy to lead that effort?
I think Kevin McCarthy is doing a pretty fine job as minority leader, but mostly what he does is rote bashing of Joe Biden. I do think that some of the most prominent individuals in the party, like Senators Tom Cotton, Ben Sasse, Nikki Haley, indeed Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State, perhaps even Donald Trump's Vice President, Mike Pence, do have it within themselves to make the kinds of points and statements that I'm suggesting as a counterbalance to Joe Biden.
I hope that will be a subsequent column. Daniel Henninger's column is linked at our website at michaelmedved.com, and it is profoundly important, as his writing almost always is. We will be right back on the Medved Show with the latest on Sirhan. On the Michael Medved show, there are a couple of headlines that actually are just so terribly, terribly sad and so upsetting. And the headlines involve the following. First, RFK's son favors parole for father's assassin, Sirhan Sirhan. And this is another RFK son. Of course, RFK had 11 children. 9 of them survived today. But this is Douglas Kennedy, who at a parole hearing today, and it won't be decided today. It's going on. And by the way, I believe this could become a very explosive issue in the governor's race in California. And yes, it is a governor's race, because if Gavin Newsom, because the governor is ultimately going to go to the governor if it is approved by the parole board, the fact that on his 16th try, after having killed a presidential candidate and the U.S. senator from New York in 1968, I mean, 53 years ago, my goodness, this whole thing is unthinkable. The other headline is just incredibly sad. A Texas anti-mask freedom rally organizer fighting for his life with COVID-19. I hope God grants him recovery so that he continues to enjoy his freedom to express himself, but that he might take a more constructive position on helping to protect his fellow citizens and himself from this horrible disease or from any recurrence. The Washington Post report from San Diego, Sirhan Sirhan has been held for a long time in prison in San Diego. And for people who don't remember, on the night of the California primary, which basically had saved the campaign of Senator Kennedy, he had just lost the Oregon primary, then he won the California primary, and he gave and delivered a victory statement. I was in the very front rows, right in front of Senator Kennedy when he gave his victory statement. Then he went through a door at the back of the Ambassador Ballroom at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, and he went through that door to his death, because Sirhan Sirhan had been planning this for a long time. There are passages in diaries he had written more than a month before saying that Kennedy must die, that he was planning to kill him, and which is what makes this entire madness so upsetting. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has met with Sirhan before and said that he doesn't believe that Sirhan committed the murder. Now, this is just beyond belief, well documented. In addition to his diaries, which he's never contested, indicating that he planned to kill Kennedy. It was premeditated. It wasn't something that came over him. And the idea that they now want to parole him, he was originally sentenced to death, but which, of course, would have been more appropriate. But what happened is that his death sentence was overturned with Supreme Court decisions and the state legislature. So he then is not sentenced to life without possibility of parole. He's sentenced to life with possibility of parole. What the parole board hearing is supposed to be figuring out is whether he is appropriate in terms of having shown proper remorse, and he is no risk of offending again. But here's what Douglas Kennedy, who was a toddler when his father was gunned down in 68, said when he spoke at the hearing, the parole hearing for Sirhan Sirhan. Washington Post reports that he said, "I'm overwhelmed just by being able to view Mr. Sirhan face to face. I think I've lived my life both in fear of him and his name in one way or another, and I am grateful today to see him as a human being worthy of compassion and love." Sirhan was wearing a blue prison uniform with a paper towel folded like a handkerchief and tucked into his pocket. He smiled as Kennedy spoke. Sirhan, 77, told members of the California Parole Board at this 16th bid for freedom that he had learned to control his anger and was committed to living peacefully. "I would never put myself in jeopardy again," he said. "You have my pledge. I will always look to safety and peace and nonviolence." To say, "I will never put myself in jeopardy again," he didn't put himself in jeopardy. He killed a man. He put other people in jeopardy. "You have my pledge that I will never put myself in jeopardy again." In other words, what he is acknowledging is, gee, it was a terrible thing for me to kill somebody and get caught. It's outrageous. Some Kennedy family members, Los Angeles law enforcement officers, and the public submitted letters opposing Sirhan's release. Parole Board Commissioner Robert Barton said at the start of the proceeding, which was held virtually today, where Sirhan appeared from San Diego County Prison. He said, "We don't have a DA here, but I have to consider all sides," Barton said, noting that the board would consider arguments made in the past by prosecutors opposing his release, depending on their relevance. The reason there's not a prosecutor there is because Charles Gaskin, who is the newly elected DA in Los Angeles, he took office last year after running on a reform platform, says he idolized the Kennedys and mourned RFK's assassination, but is sticking to his policy that prosecutors not influence decisions to release prisoners. "The decision is best left to board members," he said, "who can evaluate whether Sirhan has been rehabilitated." They asked Sirhan, who was very explicit in his diaries and in his previous statements and statements right when he was arrested. He killed Robert Kennedy for the crime of supporting Israel. And Sirhan is a Jordanian who claims Palestinian identity. He was born in 1944 when Palestine was still a mandate for Britain. So he was originally a citizen of Jordan. And in fact, he has never taken American citizenship despite living here since he was 12. He has acknowledged he was angry at Kennedy for his support of Israel. He was asked about how he feels about the Middle East conflict today. Sirhan broke down crying and temporarily couldn't speak. "Take a few deep breaths," said Parton, who noted the conflict had not gone away and still touched a nerve. Sirhan said he doesn't follow what's going on in the region, but he thinks about the suffering of... decided. This is the Michael Medved show, and the killer who perpetrated the murder of Senator Robert Kennedy has won parole in California. This is remarkable. The story is now with the support of two Kennedys, the two Kennedy brothers I mentioned to you, one of whom even is lunatic enough. Of course, Robert Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., has already said he doesn't even believe that Sirhan performed the killing, which, again, if you just read about it for a moment, it is so obvious. He claims there was a second gunman, which is absurd beyond belief. In any event, the story is U.S. Senator Robert F. Kennedy's assassin was granted parole about 10 minutes ago. after two of RFK's sons spoke in favor of Sirhan's release, and prosecutors declined to argue he should be kept behind bars. That's because the newly elected DA in Los Angeles abandoned what they had been followed by all previous prosecutors in 15 prior parole hearings and didn't even show up. The decision was a major victory for the 77-year-old prisoner, though it does not assure his release. The ruling by the two-person panel at Sirhan's 16th parole hearing will be reviewed over the next 90 days by the California Parole Board staff. Then it will be sent to the governor, who will have 30 days to decide whether to grant it, reverse it, or modify it. This is why this is going to be a major issue and should be a major issue in this upcoming gubernatorial race in California. Because, look, I think it's very easy for one of the candidates, for Larry Elder, the conservative who is leading the pack as an alternative to Gavin Newsom, it's very easy for him to say how outrageous this is, how wrong it is. One of the reasons it's wrong is Sirhan hasn't even gone back to admitting his guilt. He admitted his guilt on June 9th, just days after he did a full confession. And he talked about going to the shooting range and preparing this and why he thought that Kennedy had to die. He admitted it, and then later he claimed he had no recollection of actually shooting Kennedy. He didn't remember it. And the people who believe in a conspiracy think he was hypnotized. Now, he had no problem remembering details right before the shooting. Everything he was doing, the shooting itself, apparently he blacked out, and they were trying to say it was mental incapacity, and he... Okay, at the very least, there should have been some requirement that he recognized that this conspiratorial stuff, crap, about a second gunman. And the night of the assassination, I mean, the initial cover of the assassination, coverage of it, and those of us who were there, we were locked in the hotel because the FBI was on the scene. I mean, it was a major assassination, obviously a major assassination in American history. And they had sealed off the hotel, so we were stuck there all night. And one of the reports that had begun circulating on TV is that police were looking for a woman in a polka dot dress who had had something to do with the assassination. Sirhan has answered questions about this. He's done interviews about it. And it was only years after the assassination that he came up with this crap that he blacked out. He had no recollection. And therefore, he should be paroled. Well, now he's paroled. Why? Two members of the Kennedy family, and one of them being Robert F. Kennedy Jr., is the chief anti-vaxxer in the country. And again, not just opposed to the COVID-19 vaccination, not just opposed to mask mandates, opposed to vaccines in general, and who believes all of the conspiratorial crap. And of course, he believes this conspiratorial crap that his father was actually killed by someone else who somehow managed to get out of that kitchen while everyone was struggling with Sirhan, who was holding the gun and had just fired the gun and had hit Senator Kennedy three times, twice in the lower body and once in the back of the head, where he fired at point-blank range. The reason that this... Well, obviously it matters to me because I was there. And because the blow that that assassination struck to the country and to our electoral process, this is a news report that Jeremy just found announcing the news right after we had celebrated. And again, you can actually hear my voice shouting out at the celebration moments before the killing. This is the way the news was announced 53 years ago. Listen.
Really loud. been shot. Is that possible?
No!
Is that possible?
It could be.
Is it possible, ladies and gentlemen? It is possible. He has not only Senator Kennedy. Oh my God! Senator Kennedy has been shot, and another man, a Kennedy campaign manager, and possibly shot in the head. I am right here. Rafer Johnson has a hold of a man who apparently has fired the shot.
That's it, Rafer. Get it. Get the gun, Rafer.
I had not heard that. And that was obviously close to the kitchen where Rafer Johnson, the Olympian decathlon winner, Roosevelt Grier, great football player, was one of the people who tackled Sirhan. And you see, the idea that today all he can say about whether he still feels the same about the Arab-Israeli dispute— assassination occurred, and Sirhan has said in the past that he planned it that way. It was the one-year anniversary of the Six-Day War, which was initiated by Egypt and Syria, and in which Israel defended itself because Gamal Abdel Nasser, the dictator of Egypt, had said, yes, we will push the Jewish people into the sea, and promised a second Holocaust. That Six-Day War, which didn't go the way that Sirhan wanted it to go, again, he was born in what was then Jordan, or actually later became Jordan. I think when he was born, it was still mandatory Palestine. And in any event, he came to the United States when he was 12 and had a troubled life. And one of the things that I think is fascinating is he claims, or his mother claimed, that he was a troubled figure from childhood because he had witnessed some of the horrors of the Israeli war for independence, and he had seen his older brother die in front of him. How does older brother die? He was hit by a Jordanian military vehicle in the midst of a struggle. The entire thing is terribly sad, and it's sad to me because this comes along with the idea that he has completely reformed, he's completely given things up, and the fact is, a number of people, when you look at American and American soil victims of Arab terror. It's arguable that Robert F. Kennedy was the first one. We will be back with a horror film, appropriately, Candyman, and a pandemic film, also appropriately, Together. That and more coming up on The Medved Show. Even and on the Medved Show, hoping that there is a turn in the atmosphere. I don't mean necessarily more rain or more heat or less heat. The atmosphere that has pervaded this nation for, oh, at least the last 10 days or more, with the horrible, horrible events yesterday, and then today, the extraordinarily depressing event to me in particular because I was there, the parole that is granted to Robert Kennedy's killer, Sirhan. Just one last word on this, and it does affect the California election. I think if Larry Elder and other Republicans who are on the ballot clearly urge Governor Newsom to overrule, which he has the power to do, he's going to be asked to do it within 90 days, getting him to overrule the parole that's been granted outrageously to this Palestinian terrorist killer, that will mean a great deal in the upcoming recall election. Will also mean a great deal if Newsom goes ahead, as I think is widely expected, and verifies the parole, because that will be indicating his sympathy with the extreme radical left wing of the Democratic Party, the Rashida Tlaibs and the Ilhan Omars and the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortezes, who I'm sure will all be applauding the idea that a cold-blooded political assassin should be granted release from prison with no, I repeat, no indication anywhere of rehabilitation. Okay. A horror film is actually getting more attention than any other film released this weekend, perhaps appropriately. Jordan Peele has made provocative, thought-provoking, politically charged horror films before. He made the film Us, and he, of course, is best known for Get Out, which actually won Oscar nominations and actually won an Oscar for screenplay, I believe, for Jordan Peele. In any event, he's now the producer and co-writer of a remake, and actually a sequel to a film from 1992. Now, the original Candyman was kind of a gross-out horror film that had some political elements, but it was about a black Avenger against generations of racism, who was in the Cabrini Green housing projects with a massive hook, which he was used to kill people and terrify kids. And the whole idea was, if you said the name Candyman, and I don't want to say it too often because we don't want to get to five, if you say it five times in front of a mirror, he emerges to do bloody, gory damage. The new film? Well, it has even more going on. Listen.
I feel really connected to this neighborhood. Cabrini Green was the project. I just moved in around the corner.
The old candy factory.
I'm an artist.
You're looking for Candyman. He's the monster that's part of this neighborhood. Candyman.
The urban legend is, if you say his name five times while looking in the mirror, he appears in the reflection and kills you.
Who would do that?
Okay, who would do that would be people wanting to suggest that, first of all, police are displayed here not as a deliverance against the Candyman killer, but as agents of oppression, very directly. The plot, which tries to pick up on characters and themes that were in the original film in 1992, is confusing. There is a good deal of satire about the art world and about pretentious white people who dominate the art world and try to treat the main character, who has appears as a little boy in the first film, try to treat him as the great black hope in painting, and he paints images of Candyman. And the one thing about the film is it is very difficult to feel deep sympathy for any of these people, even as they're getting butchered. And as there's an obsession with bees from the first film, because the original Candyman was coated in honey, that is repeated this time. But to actually spend a full minute watching the picking of a scab, a really grotesque picking of a scab, that's the kind of movie we're talking about. I think it's by far the least successful and least interesting of Jordan Peele's films so far. And honestly, because some of it is effectively nauseating, which I guess some people want to see, it's rated R, of course, 2 stars, but the critical acclaim that it is receiving has to do with the idea that it's a very woke movie all about oppression and against gentrification. A very different film is Vacation Friends. This is about a couple who meet during a vacation in Mexico, and because there's been some confusion with the room, they end up sharing a room and becoming friends, having a week together of a great deal of drinking. But then the sort of lighthearted John Cena couple, yes, that's John Cena, Fast and Furious, actually is very much involved in crashing the wedding. They weren't invited. That takes place 7 months later, involving Little Ray Howery and his bride from a upper crust black community. Listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, the bride, gentlemen, bride and groom to be Emily and Marcus.
You son of a! You said we were best friends.
What are you two doing here?
We met these two animals down in Mexico.
Why does the salt not taste salty?
Oh, because it's cocaine.
What? We actually brought it from home. Very, very easy if you ever want to try it. It's just a Ziploc and a full shampoo bottle.
This only happened because you said see you later.
I said it without meaning it like any decent person would. And somehow he's charming my dad.
This weekend is all about you.
Well, I like the sound of that.
This is the best wedding I've ever been to.
Okay, the whole thing, of course, is about how John Cena, who is supposed to be a free spirit and an Army veteran and somebody who enjoys his drugs and drinking a great deal, that sort of breaks up this wedding and causes embarrassment for this stuffy upper crust people. The main character, Lil Ray Howery, is well played. Actually, John Cena has some comic chops. There are moments of laughter, but it is a gross-out movie. And again, it's the laughter you see seeing people in painful situations. A few laughs for two stars, rated R very much. It's now streaming on Hulu and playing in theaters. So playing in theaters is Together, which is a very serious film and probably the best film so far of any kind about the pandemic. Two companions, they're identified as he and she in the film, are the only real characters in the movie at all, and they spend much of the time talking to the audience as if you were a visitor in their living room where all the action takes place. They're trying to keep a relationship together in the midst of a lockdown. Together, listen.
They just announced the lockdown.
We're getting through this.
We need to get on.
I hate you sometimes, but I never despise you.
You know, is it a lockdown phenomenon? Are other people experiencing this?
I don't want to go back to normal.
Running towards each other at the speed of light, shouting, get away from me. I can't do that anymore.
I think there's this chance that we'll somehow end up in this place that is the love that exists beyond hate. It's unique.
Did you hear that in a song or something?
Sharon Horgan and James McAvoy are both superb actors. And I know it doesn't sound like a lot of fun, but it is riveting to watch and deeply moving. And I think it will recall for a lot of people elements of anyone's experience of the lockdown period of the pandemic. Together is rated R. There's a great deal of harsh language and descriptions of pain and death and illness. But it is ultimately inspiring, actually, in terms of the ability of human beings to, well, to work things out. And I think it's one of the best films of the year, almost certainly. And directed by Stephen Daltrey, the acclaimed British director who did The Hours and many other films. 4 stars for Together. We also have a new film called The Colony about a post-apocalyptic world. We will deal more with that later, or you can get it in our newsletter or at our website at michaelmedved.com. On Monday, we will be welcoming Ari Fleischer, who did a great tweet saying the only reason this is one of the biggest airlifts in history is because it's one of the largest abandonments in history. Hate to abandon you, but wish everybody a great weekend, in spite of what's going on in the world in this greatest nation on God's green earth.